in your brain, you're in the Nerd's Domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Nerds Domain podcast. This week, I'm talking with Accidental Cyclops, about their game in progress currently being called Ascendant. It's an engine-building negotiation game. See, guys, I'm not even going to edit that out. We're just going to keep going. That's how I roll.
Awesome.
So I'm here with Michael. I asked beforehand. I should know this.
You should.
Hollerup. Whatever.
You weren't even...
I wasn't.
That's
it, it starts with an H, though, so there's that.
I had Ha, right? I had the H-A. Okay.
Hollerup.
Eric Barnett, can't mess that up. Jason Ward and Adam Kunzmiller, and they're all collectively... Accidental Cyclops. So, let's talk a little bit about you guys to start off. So, who would like to start to talk about a little bit about your? Well, yeah, we'll do that. Mikey, would you like to talk to us about a little bit about your experience in gaming in general?
Sure. So, I've been playing games pretty much for about as long as I can remember. Kind of generally started out with board games and card games, playing gin or rummy with my grandfather, aunts, and uncles. As many Final Fantasies I can get my grubby little hands on when I was a kid. Got into board gaming, I guess the more serious games, not like, our, Ameritrash Monopoly games, but, like Settlers and things like that, maybe about 10 years ago, and, been enjoying that ever since.
Okay. So you've got a wide range of likes as far as games go?
Yeah, I think so. Kind of my favorite game, probably Dominion, which is a good fan favorite. Hanabi, which I love, which Adam introduced me to. It's just a great game. And my dark horse, Hey, That's My Fish. Love that game.
I enjoy that game. Yeah. All right. So Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Okay. I have also been playing board games and card games since I was very young. I started role playing when I was about 12 years old with my brother, and started playing D&D and been playing games like that ever since.
Yeah.
Role playing games, LARP, board games, pretty much everything you can name. Actually, LARP is what kind of brought all of us together.
Okay. So some of your favorite games that you really...
Well, I know it breaks some people's hearts, but I really love Arkham Horror. It's one of my favorite games, even though it really is just a game where you set up.
You should play a board. I don't think I've ever played Arkham Horror.
You set it up, and then somebody tells you how to win the game.
Yeah, it's like Epidemic in that way, or Pandemic.
Yeah. It's a great game with the right people.
Okay, so Jason, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure. I'm probably more than anyone else at the table a role player, more than a gamer. I didn't really start playing board games until a few years ago, really when Adam introduced me to his collection of 4,200 games or whatever it is at this point.
About 600.
Oh, that was close. I grew up playing D&D. In fact, I had to hide it from my parents for years when I was younger. We used to call it Parcheesi.
Right.
I'd go play Parcheesi with my friend's mom.
Why'd you have to hide it? Did they think it was
evil
worship or something?
Yeah, evil Dungeons and Dragons. I'll become a Satanist if I keep playing. I grew up role-playing mostly, and I've been running and playing role-playing games for about 20 years, so that's where my passion is. But lately I've been getting into board games a little bit more. Obviously, designing them, I needed to learn as much as I could about them, and so I'm with Mikey. Hanabi's hardcore. I love it. It's a good collective game. I like Axis and Allies. I don't know why. I played it drunk in college a lot. That probably has something to do with it. What else do I like?
Drunk Axis and Allies is not a cheap proposition.
Oh, no, not at all.
Really sustain yourself.
You do. You got to get a good 6-hour buzz going to finish a game of Axis and Allies that way. So, yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
And Adam, how about you?
I'm probably the one in the group that's the most insane board gamer of us all. I've been a big fan of board games for a long time. I got into it like many do with Settlers.
Okay.
Got involved on Board Game Geek. And started going to conventions, went to Board Game Geek Con. Now I go to 3 or 4 different conventions a year. I own several hundred board games. I have a dedicated room in my house to playing games.
Which is quite awesome, honestly.
Yeah, a custom fabricated gaming table that can hold like 3 copies of Arkham Horror at once.
Well, really one if you get all the expansions.
Yeah, one with all the expansions. That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, that's kind of the angle I bring. And I went to school with Mike. And that's kind of how I ended up getting introduced to the other two. Favorite games, Hanabi is easily my favorite. I've introduced it to many people, as you can hear. I'm just a total fanatic about Hanabi. It's a wonderful game. I also like interesting, quirky, trick-taking games where things aren't what don't work normally the way people are used to.
Okay.
I like deduction a lot. And social games. I'm a big fan of social games.
All right. Well, let's talk about what you guys are currently calling Ascendant. Where did that start? Who came up with this? There's four of you, so I mean, I'm sure it's a group project, but where did that come from?
So I think, and my recollection is that early on, Jason said sort of a theme that he wanted to explore. And that's kind of how all this kind of came about. To give you the quick 30-second, I think we were over at Eric's house working on his his community garden last summer when there was a drought. And
good year for a garden.
Yeah. And Jason had been talking about a role-playing system that he was kind of been tinkering with and working on for a while. And I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. And, you know, I kind of have this, you know, I'd say a little bit of an entrepreneurial bend to me. So I was like, hey, why don't we, like, do something about that? Quickly realized we didn't know a lot about game design yet. Still have a lot to learn. And kind of went from there. And quickly we, you know, Eric and Adam brought a lot to the table that, you know, we needed other people and needed their ideas and needed help.
And there's no way to go about this designing a game by yourself. I don't know how anybody can do that and stay sane. So I'm glad we have four of us instead of one.
Yeah, so Jason had an idea, a theme, which was basically, you want to talk about the theme real quick initially?
We talked about the theme of the game? Yeah, sure. So the idea behind the game was originally that you are trying to usurp the Emperor an empire that nobody's ever heard of because it's in a world nobody's ever heard of. But the idea being it's a Roman-like empire and you're trying to usurp the throne. And I will start by saying that what we have now is nothing like what we started with, aside from that very basic concept.
Okay.
Well, and when we started, that theme, that's where we ended up with what worked. So we started coming together basically saying we want to make a game. And Jason already had some things he had done with work on the role-playing system and the role-playing setting that he had been putting work into. And we all kind of agreed to try and come up with game ideas that we found intriguing, try them a little bit and see what had the most potential, what had some legs on it, and then focus on that. And that's kind of where we landed on what we put all our effort into.
Yeah, like having a round of pitches where like each individual basically came to the table and said, here's what I've designed. Let's play through this, you know, maybe a refinement or two, and then kind of after everybody had an opportunity to pitch a game design that they'd come up with, we basically said, this is the one we think we has the most legs, and just decided we were going to start working on that rather than having four different ideas. We wanted to focus on one.
Yeah, it allowed us to focus. I think it's upped our timeline a lot. It's made us move a lot faster having one thing to do and everyone kind of dedicated to that. But for me, the most interesting part so far has been that pitch process where everyone came and said, here's my really hacked together spreadsheet or pencil and paper or prototype.
I can't speak for the other guys, but that went from not existing and not something I had even really pondered to being a game I was showing you in the span of like a day or two.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't like I had this pet project in my back pocket and was like, let me show you guys this. It's not like, oh crap, I need something.
We did what, like a month of pitches. Every week someone pitched a new game or something like that. And, so that was kind of cool. Interesting way to go about it.
So you went from this pitching to what I assume became Ascendant? Now, I mean, was that where it started?
So,
did it look
so
like
the way
it
that it went out is we all pitched games. I remember them all too. Still,
yeah, I do too.
Mojo Rico, which was terrible. And after pitching, we all kind of said, "Well, which of these had the most potential?" And then we focused on that specifically. But the game that we focused on as Ascendant, or that became Ascendant, is so miles away from where we ended up. It was more like, there's this one small aspect of this game that I think is intriguing and unique, and let's see what we can do with that. And that was kind of that was from what everything followed.
So I played a little bit of the game. We didn't get through a full game, but I played a little bit of it. So there's a bunch of different aspects. There's this luck manipulation aspect. So some negotiation. There's a little bit of tableau building. You called it an engine building negotiation game. does that really fit what it is, or is it more than that?
It's kind of a hard game to describe, to be honest. It has a lot of different inner working pieces, but it's surprisingly easy to play given all that. But I think the overall gist of the game is you're working to amass people as allies to your cause, and the allies each have abilities that affect the game. They affect the other players. And the primary way that you acquire those people is by the choices you make and the deals that you strike with the other players. So the engine building aspect comes into play when you target which allies you're going to get and have abilities that have synergies and allow you to do powerful things and get victory points faster. The negotiation is everything else. It's how you get them. It's how you set yourself up for success moving forward. It's how you leverage the abilities you have.
It's how you affect your odds of being able to acquire allies, which I think is the most interesting or unique mechanic of the whole game, is that sort of persistence, odd manipulation, odds management aspect in the reputation deck. If you want to talk about how that works, Adam.
Yeah, that persistent odds thing was actually kind of, I think, the initial spark that we thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everything is kind of built around. But the persistent odds manipulation, which is a very fancy way, a very fancy term for this thing we made up. Every player has their own deck of cards. And throughout the course of the game, that deck is going to be altered by the choices they make. But there's only two options for the types of cards, success and failure, essentially. We call them favor and apathy. When you're trying to do something, you shuffle that deck and draw a number of cards, and based on what you draw, you either succeed or you don't. So what's intriguing is, as you draw those cards, they come out of your deck, and over the course of the game, through negotiation and through whatever allies you use, you get to alter the makeup of that deck. So if you fail a couple times in a row, while it's unfortunate that you're kind of behind the other players because you didn't get those allies, you've also got a reputation deck that has had a lot of failures removed from it. So you're now set up to win the next few things that you try. So you might be able to get an ally that's more difficult to win and somehow try and claw your way back or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the game, you'll have, you know, depending on the choices you've made, you'll have a very different reputation than maybe the player next to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played games where I have a reputation deck consisting of 3 cards, and my neighbor has a reputation deck consisting of, you know, 50 cards, because we've been doing different things.
And there are goals that help kind of shape that, as well as everything else you do in the game.
Yes.
Both communal and personal, right?
Yep. Yeah, private goals and public goals, yeah.
Okay. So it went from this prototype where you guys kind of sat down and threw it together, and has changed a lot over that. What went into that design, that change? What has that process been like?
A lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
About 50 playthroughs now, I guess,
yeah.
Just with us.
It's almost all trial and error. We would get together. We've had very regular meetings for this, and kind of approached it in a business-like manner to an extent, in that we want them to have regular meetings, we want to have regular discussions about what we're doing. And most of those meetings, we had a game out and we played it, and then we said, well, what worked and what didn't. Or we went to some conventions, like Protospiel, and said what worked and what didn't, based on what other people were thinking. And we just continue getting feedback, and every time we get feedback, we make a couple of changes. I mean, when the original version of the game, the persistent odds mechanic didn't even exist.
Yeah.
It was something we developed because people were like, this other thing you had relies too much on luck. And we said, well, how can we make a similar mechanic that doesn't rely quite as much on luck? And we said, well, maybe we can shape it over time. So your luck is at least somewhat in your own hands.
I think at the very start, when we were looking at what we could design, it was an approach of, what is it that we even have to work with? We have this deck of cards that each player has. We have these cards that they're targeting and trying to get. We don't know what we were going to call them yet. We got victory points. I'm like, okay, what sort of things are interesting that manipulate those options? You know, getting more tries to win at something, or spending victory points to do this. And so our first iteration was literally like, let's just throw everything at a wall and see what sticks with regards to how we can manipulate the things that exist in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, we still come up with like, oh, you know, I haven't thought of doing this interesting tweak on how this game works. That opens up a whole new line of cards.
Excellent.
That we haven't even considered yet.
Yeah, I like that kind of what we have right now is we have like a system that we've kind of constructed, and I think in general we're very happy with that system that the game currently exists in, the way the turn goes, the phases of the turn and things like that. And, you know, for the most part, when we've had, you know, Protospiel playtests and playtests with people that, you know, aren't, you know, designers of the game, within, like, one or two turns, people seem to be like, okay, I got this. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they don't have all the nuance, but they, you know, okay, I understand how the tune works, I understand how this goes.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, and then they're going. Mm-hmm. So as far as that system is concerned, I think really happy with
yeah.
how that's shaped up. And so like Adam was saying, we have this little twist in this kind of, in this system that opens up this new design space that's really interesting.
Yeah, there's almost infinite design space. Even though there's only about three mechanics in the whole game, the way you can
yeah.
manipulate those three things together mathematically isn't infinite, but it may as well be as far as the design space we've got.
Well, and John, who's also on the podcast normally, he and I played this a month ago, give or take. And I think the hardest concept we had grasping was the negotiation phase, because I don't know a lot of games where you just sit there and say, I'll help you and you help me and we'll both help each other, and then the other two go, well, we got to screw them. So it's weird, like that's the hardest concept. The rest of it is just really reading the cards and understanding the interplay.
Yeah.
I think we played four rounds, and at the end of the fourth round, I was ready to go. And it's what, 10 rounds, and it's done.
It's a 10 round game.
And I felt like at the end of the fourth round, I wasn't sure if I was going to win or not, but I had a good grasp of what I needed to do to get close.
Yeah.
So
another interesting aspect of that negotiation is this is a game, and I'm not sure there's a lot that are similar, where negotiation is just whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, I think that was one of the hard parts, because
yeah.
it was, what can we negotiate for? Mm-hmm. And there were some things like, you cannot negotiate these things specifically, but I didn't realize we could negotiate away our victory points. Like, yeah, you just take my victory points for whatever I want in return. How do you think, mm-hmm. how do you feel about that? So that aspect has a lot to it that has
yeah.
potential.
That negotiation piece is really what dictates the type of playthrough you're going to have. If people are really stingy in how they negotiate, you're going to have a really fast playthrough in which people are just doing the minimum amount of negotiation and acquiring allies and building an engine. But then there are other playthroughs where everything's on the table and it can take, you know, a good long time to get a good negotiation going, but it can make or break your game.
And the people that are going to like negotiation are going to kind of self-select into those sort of longer games, too.
Yeah.
I've definitely enjoyed, while watching other people play test, hearing people come up with negotiation terms that I hadn't considered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how's this deal strike you? And I'll do this. I'm like, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I would have never thought of that.
Yeah.
It's fun to see those things develop, for
yeah.
sure.
I've been astonished. Some of our playthroughs at Protospiel in particular have been very enlightening, because we saw people of all ages and all skill levels playing the game, and some of the people who were least skilled in game playing, a 12-year-old I remember, was a master negotiator. He was just beating the pants off everybody around him because he could negotiate anything from anybody. And so it's really a leveling mechanic in a way as to how can you get other people to help you.
Yeah, and I think that also depends on who you're playing with, because when we played, it was me and John and Jason and Mike, and I know Jason and Mike pretty well, and I know John really well, so I knew what to kind of expect, and I knew that negotiating could become very dangerous in that aspect. it can quickly turn that way, but at the same time, if you have a bunch of, you know, kids that can kind of grasp the concept, I think it's still, there's a lot of options. So you're currently calling it Ascendant. Why is it just now currently called Ascendant? Have you, what why haven't you locked in a name?
Because Ascension is taken.
it sounds too close to Ascension.
That's fair.
And you know, it's a deck game. So people
yeah.
will say, oh, it's like Ascension. It's really not. It's not at all
yeah.
like Ascension, but
no.
there are cards in both of them.
Not at all.
Right?
Yeah.
So that we were trying to get away from Ascendant for a while because of that likeness, I think, is really the only reason. It's not a bad name. It's a fitting name. It's in the beginning of the alphabet, and that's always good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Aardvark's in Ascendant.
That's right. So, and pretty much every other name we can come up with is either taken or similar to something else, or tongue-in-cheek, and it doesn't
okay.
really fit the theme. It's kind of a serious theme.
Yeah, yeah. So how many times has it changed? Is this just the first name?
As many times have we played it? I mean,
okay.
The name?
We can't tell you what it was originally called because
yeah.
it's not appropriate for your audience.
Thank you.
It was very descriptive, though.
It was. We then moved to Ascendant, and it was that for the longest amount of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
We switched then to Allegiance recently and found out that there's another game published recently being called Allegiance.
Okay.
And now we're back to Ascendant.
It may or may not be the final title.
Right.
We'll find out.
I think we switched to Allegiance long enough to try and print materials with Allegiance on it before we saw that Allegiance was taken.
Yeah.
It was a really good change.
Yeah. It was a really good change.
So you guys have been working on this for, you said summer 2000,
Well, we had about 2 months of figuring things out and pitching. So we started late fall, I think, with this particular game of 2012. So we're just about a year and a half now.
Year and a half. And so over that timeline, you've played on a weekly-ish basis, bi-weekly probably?
Usually probably every other week and with some sort of crunch sessions.
Yeah.
In the middle.
And often we'll play multiple playthroughs because we'll play three or four rounds and be like, okay, that new thing we tried isn't working or is working really well. We don't have to play through an entire game to see how mechanics going to work often.
Once you've seen the cards 30 times, you're like, I think I can see how this is going to go from here on out.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll have a team meeting. All right, are we going to play it now? And if you're like, no, we have. Has it changed enough to justify playing it again?
So you've spent a year and a half between pitching it, getting it ready, really tweaking the rules. So you've got a year and a half in, and you're not ready yet. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, we're close. I feel like we're close.
We're pretty close to opening some playtests, to open playtests.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of people playtest it, but not like broad public playtests. And I feel like we're getting really close to that point.
And I'm pretty happy with the progress we've made for the time we've had. Because when we started, we had an interesting idea and just a giant mess of a game.
Okay.
And I think where we are now is an interesting idea that's pretty well implemented and just needs some polish and fine-tuning.
Okay. So one of the things I talked to Jason and Mikey about was rules, because you didn't have any. And so are you guys going to have a rule set ready for...
Oh, absolutely. So, we do have a rule set written, actually.
And have you written it yourself? Because that was one of the things I was concerned about.
Yeah, we talked to you about this at HoosierCon.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that we've written it, but we think that someone else should write the rules for our game, because we can't explain what we know inherently at this point in time to someone who wouldn't know it inherently. We're going to take shortcuts in our explanation oftentimes.
Well,
so,
and we all love Fantasy Flight games, but their rule books are kind of terrible. I think we can all kind of agree that
At Fantasy Flight are wonderful people and they make great games. I've never touched one of their rule books. They're just too big.
Adam always just teaches me the game.
Exactly.
Adam, how do I play this game? So, what's your timeline now? You've got how long? What's your production schedule? I mean, you're still working out the kinks, but I'm sure you're getting close to a production schedule, right?
That's a great question. I mean, we don't have a publishing game yet. We don't even know exactly what that looks like at this point in time. We are working with a partner who offered us a timeline. We're not sure if we're comfortable with that timeline, to be honest. We would love to have this thing published sometime next year, and we think it's close enough to be able to do that.
Okay.
In my mind, I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Yeah, I think all four of us are very wary of Kickstarter. I think we've seen some of the horror stories and some of the success stories, and are pretty honest with ourselves that none of us really have the capacity to manage it appropriately and do it justice.
Yeah.
So our focus has been, let's get this game as good as it can be, let's show it to people, and try and ally with someone who can manage that piece.
Okay.
So we have a potential partnership in that now.
Right.
But the time frame Jason was talking about is that, you know, they have other projects that are before ours, and we might want to move faster. Yeah, it just depends.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So sometime next year, early next year, late next year.
My guess is it would be closer to late next year than early. I can't see it being any sooner than a year from now, more like a year and a half, I would guess.
Yeah, I can't believe it's already April.
I know, right?
Yeah. So you've spent a year and a half on it. You're looking at spending a whole nother year. And that's just on development, right? I mean, that's that year and a half, that year from now, we'll probably be getting beginning production, full production.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on how much work we have to do. I mean, I can do some graphic design, and we can put the cards together. We've got some prototypes already shipped off to be printed on, you know, real cardstock and things like that to be play tested. And, you know, if we have to do more of that sort of work, it might take longer than if we have a publisher who can do that sort of stuff for us. So it's really hard to predict a timeline at this point in time.
Absolutely.
As far as game readiness, it's almost there now. But
the game itself is very simple, though. I mean, it's mostly just a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
And tokens,
yeah. So there's not really any, like, crazy hurdles.
Okay.
So it's really just a matter of finalizing and obtaining art assets.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
And that's the biggest hurdle for us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If we had money right now and we're happy and just wanted to get the game published, we could go from where we are today to publish probably in 6 months, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah.
So let's talk more about the game design in a general sense, not just about this, which I know this is mostly your experience, but what has been the ups and downs, the pitfalls? What have you learned from it? What what struck you as really simple that you didn't think would be, hopefully, something was simple, and what struck you as incredibly difficult and you didn't expect that. Anybody can...
So I think one of the things that's been interesting about working in this design team is that each one of us is bringing different things to the table, and I think that has actually worked very well for us. I myself am very focused on the mechanics of the game, how things are working, whether that's going to be fun, whether that's compelling and worthwhile. And I have been very outspoken in my disinterest in being. Because that's not what drives me at all. But that's fine, because that's something that Jason cares about.
Okay.
And I think that's worked out great.
I know that I can always go to, you know, Adam if I'm like, how's this look balance-wise? Or, you know, how's this going to interact with this? And he'll be like, oh, I think this is how it's going to go. And 98% of the time he's right.
Okay.
Sorry for hitting the table.
Yeah. So anything else that sticks out for...
Well, so I... the people in the room know, but your audience might not. I worked in a game store for many, many years. And so a lot of my approach has been, is this something that somebody would buy? If I were a guy selling this in the store, could I get somebody to buy this game? And that's a lot of where my decision-making comes from. I look at a game and I'm like, man... You know, this playthrough, we were just weren't having fun. We need to change something so that this is fun enough that I could say, hey, guy, you should buy that game because we had a really good time playing it last time. So that's, and I think we all do that when we step in. We're like, yeah, but, Jason says, but does it fit the theme if we change it this way? And I say, well, but is it quite as much fun for somebody?
Would you pay $40?
Yeah, would you pay $40 for this if it works this way? And Mojo says, well, what if we change this mechanic? Is it going to work, you know, solidly and still stay together well? And it just is all, you know, we all bring our strengths to it.
I think one of the things that has been difficult, although I don't know how surprising it is, I expected it to be difficult, is riding that line between things that are complex but fun and interesting,
okay,
versus simple and accessible, and trying to balance all of that together. Because some of our initial designs had cards that were just ridiculous, and like it was a giant wall of text, but they were hilarious and they were really interesting and fun, and it was tough to say goodbye to those cards, and maybe they'll come back as promos or something like that. But
and we've certainly, I think, kind of bounced back and forth, because I think we had a very simple the cards were very, very simple initially, and we said, wow, those cards are really simple, but it's not really fun and interesting, it's just kind of there. And then we overcorrected a lot on the crunch side,
mm-hmm,
and just had this wildly complex game with cards with very, very subtle nuance, and like just like two words changed on two different cards. Like, oh, but it could totally differ because now it does this, and that was just way too much on the side. I think we've come back
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the hardest thing for me thus far has been understanding how different people communicate. So Adam will write a card and I'll be like, that's not what I thought that said, and then I'll rewrite it and Adam's like, that does not say what you think it says anymore. And so, you know, you have to be very careful with language. Because someone will read something in a totally different way, and you know, that's the complexity of English just built into the game, I suppose.
It's interesting, if even after all of that care you go to an event like Protospiel and you watch people play the game and they misinterpret a card in a way that you would have never even fathomed was possible.
Yeah.
You're just like, how? Man. And it's like a total mind blow, just like, oh, that's the way you think grammar works.
Yeah.
And that's why that means that. Okay, well, we need to simplify
it. And it can be done with a card that only has 10 words on it, too. It's not like a block of text like we were talking about earlier. It's a simple card, this plus this equals this sort of situation. And then someone will read it completely differently. You're like, whoa, really?
Yeah, this is why when I used to run Magic the Gathering tournaments, I used to always see the arguments about where does the comma end? Where's the comma at? Like, it's not that. Like,
yeah.
Come on, guys. So, yeah, I get that aspect.
On the other end of the spectrum, you'd ask maybe something that was surprisingly easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
We made a pretty fundamental change to the way that our game worked, which was this persistent deck that you would have. Before that, the what every player would do would be dictated by that turn. So then they'd have to assemble a deck and shuffle it and draw from it. And we changed it to having a deck persistent for every player that they would carry throughout the whole game. And that change, I thought, was actually... I expected it to be very clumsy and difficult.
Yeah.
And it was surprisingly easy. And it was like, the second we played it that way, we're like, yes,
this is way better.
Yeah.
Other easy stuff. I don't know. getting people to playtest. Yeah. People jump at the chance. It's really cool to have people that many people support us.
Excellent.
Whether it's at a Protospiel where people jumped at it and really enjoyed it and gave us some great critical and constructive feedback, or even among our friends and people we know, everyone's like, yeah, I really want to try it.
I know a good one. The partnership deal that we kind of tripped into.
Yeah.
So that was surprisingly easy.
Go ahead. So you tell us, though. You were there. I was not.
Well, I mean, we live in Indianapolis, so Gen Con is a natural for us. And very last second, we noticed that there was an event there called Game Designer Speed Dating. And it's an event where you sit at a table and set up your game, and for 5 minutes, a group of game publisher representatives will sit at your table and listen to your, like, five-minute pitch and ask any questions and then go. And if they're interested in an actual playthrough of the game or any sort of further information, they'll exchange info with you and you'll do that. And we found out about it at the last second. It was already full. Somebody like dropped out at the last moment and we got a spot. We're like, cool, we'll do this. Why not? Our game was, you know, pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of issues we were still working through. And one person just loved it. Like, there was so much, like, glazed over eyes and so much disinterest.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally there'd be a person who was like super engaged by it.
Yeah.
And we walked away with Gen Con with a, what was that technically called?
It's a developer agreement.
A development agreement,
yeah.
Which
was
as a result of that
cool.
event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My expectations at the end of that publisher speed dating was no one was like, yeah, you guys should just start over and give
right.
up.
Yeah.
You're on
like,
the wrong
yeah.
track.
I would have been totally fine with, huh, that's pretty interesting. I think you need to do some more work. Come back to us a little bit when you have more work done. Like, I'd have been like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, we definitely hit that one out of the park. That was my expectation.
Yeah, it was an exhausting 60 minutes during which Adam did probably 80% of the talking, but I was tired after listening to him for 60 minutes.
It felt like 15 minutes, too. It was
each,
just
yeah,
it was
yeah.
just constant.
Really fast,
yeah.
yeah.
It was a very cool event. I would encourage other prospective designers to look for things like that.
Yeah.
It was very good.
So you all have a very background in educational-wise. I mean, there's a couple of engineers, I assume. Adam, you're an engineer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you're an engineer. Eric, you have
That's not
retail.
True.
No, you.
They wouldn't call me an engineer.
They wouldn't?
They wouldn't.
Okay.
I was a computer science major.
Oh, okay.
So that's, you know.
Yeah.
The engineers look down their nose at me.
Oh, well, I'm
and
sorry.
The scientists also do that.
I
so.
Apologize. I apologize to all of our engineer listeners. He is definitely not an engineer. Eric, you have a lot
so
of retail.
I apologize to all your software engineers.
Yeah, you do.
You've got a ton of retail experience and customer service base.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Jason, you've done kind of a little bit.
I just go to school.
Of everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Either to teach or to be there to learn or.
Well, I mean, it fits my condition, the group. I mean, I'm all about story, and
yeah.
so I studied sociology, so I like people. And so,
so you all four have very different aspects to what you are. How are those affecting your game design? How does that, like, I mean, obviously Adam does all the talking when you do your speed dating, but what all does that bring to the equation?
You know, I think me talking the most at speed dating is a factor of my familiarity with board games.
Yeah.
I'm the one that has the best board game lexicon with which to talk to a publisher in a meeting.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you should be like, this is like this, and they'll be like, oh yeah, it's like that game. I know what that is. I keep hitting the table, I apologize.
it's okay.
I'm a hand talker.
You
I can't help
emphasize.
Yeah. So I think you're right, it's the lexicon. I've played all of these games. This is the one that it'll be like for you in this circumstance. And
so,
it's immediate connection.
I mean, we each have different skills that we bring to the table. For example, Jason, just because of his everyday work, has been doing almost everything with the design of our website.
Okay.
Which is great, because I have absolutely zero interest and would never have done it.
Excellent.
And, you know, he's doing a lot of great work there. So it's worked pretty well. Like, Mikey has done a lot of work in the area of getting our prototypes, getting the cards and the way that they're generated to a more polished look. Because we started with a mail merge, fast, rapid prototyping type approach where we could go from cards that we had just changed all of to printed and playing with it in like 10-20 minutes.
Yeah, I think the your thing, because you basically had the punch out business cards. You basically had, you know, sleeved magic cards and just threw in those punch out business cards, and that was awesome for prototyping. I mean,
that was great.
And I think kind of the point now I think we can do that now with our current implementation with Nandak, like with just new cards. It's just relatively straightforward to just populate, you know, our...
Yeah, we're essentially taking PDF background images that we've designed and throwing them in Nandak, which is a great program for all you designers out there that want to do card-type games. Check it out.
Nandak?
Nandak.
Nandak.
And it just, you know, you put in some code and it spits out, you know, your data on top of that image, and you're ready to go. It's pretty cool.
As far as skills, I think we also see Mikey, what you didn't mention was his MBA, and so he's been the organizer for a lot of things because he's, you know, he's here looking at this as kind of an entrepreneurial business, despite just the, you know, we would all like to make a game, but most of us would also like to make more games and have that be something we can do long term if we can sell one first.
Well, that's a nice segue. What are future plans for your games? Is this a standalone game, no expansions ever, or is this?
Sheesh.
That really depends on what happens with the first game.
only if it fails.
So assuming this is a decent success and it's well received and BGG thinks it's awesome. You guys looking at an expansion? Do you have ideas set for that? You feel comfortable with that?
The nature of the game lends itself so naturally to expansion.
Okay.
Because of that, like, design space of tweaking cards and having a different, you know, having simpler or more complex cards.
Building new engines.
That the potential for expansion is huge.
Excellent.
I think we're in another game where it was very wrapped up and nicely, tightly balanced. I don't think we would do expansion just for expansion's sake.
No.
But we already have, we haven't even come close to publishing this game, and we'll think of cards and say that's an expansion card.
Yeah, that's we've done a lot of putting stuff in the drawer for like, well, that's a really cool idea, but let's not change the whole game right now. Let's put that in the expansion drawer.
Excellent. So beyond just an expansion, you guys threw a bunch of games at the walls, and this one stuck the best. Are there other games out there to maybe tweak more?
I feel like I have some that I've been noodling around with in the back of my head, and like Adam, I really like trick-taking games, and I'm trying to do something, you know, maybe interesting with a trick-taking game. I just haven't, you know, really fleshed it out yet.
That's hard.
It is.
That is a well-plumbed design.
Yes, it is. I'm going to go ahead and say this. If we can get Joss Whedon to hear this, we're going to be pitching a Cabin in the Woods game at some point.
Heck
in
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've got a couple actually already spreadsheeted out, ready for rapid prototyping when Adam's ready to do that.
If Joss Whedon is listening to this, my listener base would be much higher.
We'll work on it.
Yeah.
So if you guys can work that out, I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, now that he hears that there's some Cabin in the Woods action, maybe.
Right? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, just think of the game when you're trying to save the world by killing all these people.
Yeah.
That's the game. You're not trying to escape. You're the one trying to save the world.
TM Accidental Cyclops. probably also Joss Whedon.
Maybe him first, even.
Yeah.
So you guys have other games that are out there. You have access to those. Do you want to do... This started off kind of as a role-playing game. Is that where you want to go eventually? Is that what
I'm
you
still
like
kicking
to
that around. Actually, when we launch the website tomorrow, accidentalcyclops.com.
Which will be today or in the past if you're listening to this.
Yeah. The role-playing game is the other game that we'll have listed up there, and it's an open setting for Fate core system
Fate
right now.
Excellent.
Also, I'm thinking about kicking around a D20 version. It's just been rattling in my head for years, and I'm finally starting to get stuff on paper.
Excellent.
He has to scratch his storyteller itch, because he hasn't been doing storytelling for LARP for many years, so now he needs to write stuff for a role-playing game.
Yeah.
I find for myself, I don't have any game ideas at all rattling around in my head. I don't. What I have are mechanics that I'd like to see in a game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, man, like, I find this twist on voting to be really interesting. But that's as far as it gets.
That's why you'll make our ideas better.
Happily.
That's why it's a team.
Yeah.
So you guys have plenty of things that could come from this, that hopefully will come from this. I would love to see all that. Where will you be this year? You've got a couple of conventions here in Indianapolis. Where you went to Protospiel, which, if I remember correctly, that was Milwaukee?
We've been to Milwaukee and East
Ann Arbor.
Lansing. Ann Arbor. That's
Ann Arbor. So where else will you be this year?
Well, I'm about to go to the Gathering of Friends, which is in Niagara Falls, New York.
Okay.
That's in like a week. So I'll be there. I'll probably have a copy of the game with me as well, if any of your listeners are there. What else?
We'll be at Gen Con again this year,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Which the publisher that we have an agreement with will also be there, so we'll be spending some time with them. They're called Cosmic Wombat.
Okay.
And where else are we going to be? Oh, also, Accidental Cyclops may be running and hosting an event, a LARP actually, at Gen Con.
Excellent.
Based on Curse of the Darkness.
Okay.
From, who makes Curse of the Darkness? I don't remember.
Oh, that's it's a storytelling thing.
It is a storytelling thing. So we'll be hosting and running that as Accidental Cyclops, hopefully.
Okay.
I will also be at Board Game Geek Con in November, and possibly at Origins. I also go to usually a regional con in there somewhere.
Okay.
Like I went to Sasquatch Game Fest in Seattle last year, for example. But that changes every year.
I think there's a Prudish Bill coming up.
Sometime Milwaukee
soon.
Again soon.
Yeah.
So
that.
We might go back to that.
So, no PAX East or Prime? Or East? Yeah, PAX East or Prime or Australia? You're not going to PAX Australia?
Nope.
No PAX Australia?
So three out of the four of us have brand new babies, or will have a brand new baby in the very near future. So
fair enough.
Travel's a little difficult. If you can't guess by his schedule, Adam is the one who doesn't have a brand new baby, since he can go to all these conventions.
So what about any PopCon?
Well, we hear you're going to be there.
We are, and we're happy if... Well, I'm going to take a second to do our little spiel.
Oh, okay.
We'd be happy if our listeners would go over to our website and click on the Want to Go to Any PopCon tab. That'll take you right to their place to buy tickets. And it puts in our promo code, and we get a little bit back from purchase of that. So, again, reminding our listeners, because we always try and do that. So, but Indie PopCon is going to be a big one, I think. It looks like it's going to be. Do you have any thoughts of being there?
I think probably one of us can at least go.
Yeah, we will likely be there. Whether we're there in an official capacity with the registration is a different is always a different matter.
We just recently went to in short succession HoosierCon and IndieCon, which are two local gaming cons, and I think we found at both of them that it's kind of awkward to just go to a con like that with the hopes of getting a lot of feedback on your game, because people are there to play games that they love.
Yeah.
And it's just weird when you don't have that capacity to say, hey, who wants to try this new thing that you've never heard of, and you know it doesn't look very professional yet, and please come over and give us your time.
That's why we love Protospiel, because
Protospiel is
everybody
awesome.
Walks in the door knowing that they're going to be playing games that they haven't ever played before.
Yeah, if you're an aspiring game designer and you haven't been to a Protospiel,
or an Unpub,
you're doing yourself a disservice. You should really just go and be in the room with other designers, and just the feedback you sort of get from the other people that are also thinking critically about your game and the mechanisms is really valuable. And you know, you have to bring the game out into the world at some point.
Yeah.
So Protospiel is something that happens regionally?
Yeah, there are four in the country, I think, right?
Maybe. I think it's one of those things where anybody can host one.
Yeah, we talked about actually hosting one here.
So it's just a matter of who has gone out of their way to go through the trouble of getting everything arranged.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and you guys have been to one?
Two. Michigan and Wisconsin.
And okay. So you guys will be at a couple conventions. Sounds like at a pretty official capacity at Gen Con, running some stuff there, and then some other stuff going on at Gen Con. And they'll be able to find you regionally. Maybe if they're up in Niagara Falls, that'd be great. Anything else going on with the company? I mean, well, here's a better question. Why Accidental Cyclops? Where did that come from?
I think it was an email one day where I said, hey, we should like call this something so I don't tell my wife, hey, I'm going to do that board game thing.
Fair enough.
I kind of wanted a name for it. And I think it was one of the first suggestions that Jason made, because I made a bunch of terrible ones. And Jason's like, how about Accidental Cyclops? And I was like, sold.
Excellent.
Got a cool logo, too, from a designer friend of ours.
Yeah.
So
Dustin Lynch is awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely helped out. He's a huge friend of the group.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, anything else you guys want to touch on? Anything you feel like we missed here?
Gosh, I don't know if I'm going to reiterate some points. I would say learn how to use spreadsheets and mail merge.
Absolutely.
Get Nandec. Don't do this alone. those are my key takeaways.
I think look out on our website for open play tests, because we're about to that point. We're going to want people to play test this and give us feedback so we can get to a final version.
Yeah, some print and play versions and some feedback forms and things like that.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, thanks for having us.
No, thank you.
Oh, that was an excellent time. You guys can find them over at accidentalcyclops.com. You can follow the company at FunWithOneEye. You can follow Jason at the_Ward, Mikey at MICHAELHAWRYLUK. So I'm not going to screw it up this time.
Not if you spell it out like that.
And Adam at RITMOJO. That's RIT, RHIT, MOJO. And then you can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/funwithoneeye. You can always find us on Twitter and Facebook. You can head over to our website at nerdsdom.com. Check out any of our reviews. Click on some stuff there, like the Amazon link, and order some stuff through there. You can write us on iTunes for this podcast or our Call of Cthulhu podcast. We'd love to have you do that. And as always, we will talk to you guys real soon.
This has been a production of the Omega Nerds Network, the network where it's on.